This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
I'm Jeff Combs. I'm everywhere on Star Trek, and you keep tuning in to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 160, Bones Looking at Bones. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Charlene Schmidt. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including how to turn your new phone into a Starfleet communications device, the states with the most Star Trek fans, and one of the strangest StarTrek.com polls we've seen in a while. Then in the feature, we're joined by Drew Stewart and Jenny Zell to get into the Halloween mood with Cat's Paw. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Char. Welcome back to the Ready Room. You're becoming, like Matthew, you're becoming a regular on here. I think the two of you have co-hosted most of the shows over the past month.
Yeah, I think this is the third week in a row now that I've been on the Ready Room in some capacity, once for the feature. I hope people aren't getting sick of me yet. Are you getting sick of me?
No, of course probably not. Are. No, I'd never get sick of you. But yeah, you've been on quite a few shows in a row, and this week's a really fun one because we're getting into the Halloween spirit now that we're into October. You know, This is dropping, it's still a few weeks until Halloween, but it's the last original series show that we're going to be doing before Halloween. And so I just had to do Cat's Paw. So that's what we're going to be doing today.
Yes, yes. This should be a lot of fun.
But we're recording the news right now as a typhoon barrels down on me here in the Tokyo studios. For those wondering what a typhoon is, because some people get the words confused, it's a hurricane over here in the Pacific Ocean.
Yeah,
and
no big deal.
This is, you know, the one, we don't give them names, so this is the very descriptive Typhoon 18 that's coming at us right now.
How distinguished for the storm.
It's very distinguished. The storm says, what, I'm just like another number to you, aren't I?
That's exactly it. It's just a number. No, nothing special at all. No big deal. Moving on. Yeah. Recording,
Move along.
No big deal. Yeah. So the hurricane is barreling in. Is it doing barrel rolls?
It is. In fact, someone just put a great animated GIF of a type of satellite image showing the wind over the entire country of Japan doing barrel rolls right now as we record.
Okay. I saw that animation. So that is what... Okay, that makes a lot more sense now, what was happening there. Wow, barrel rolls.
Well, while we're talking about disasters, Char, this is just going to lead us right into our first story here. I think it's a great transition. Mm-hmm. This is a StarTrek.com poll that was on the site recently. One of their more creative polls, they asked, which Star Trek captain would survive longest in a zombie apocalypse?
And also Halloween relevant, too. So,
oh, it is. That's true.
We got it all going on here.
We really do. Now, the results for me are completely flipped around, but tell me what you think about the results. First, tell us what the results are, Char.
Okay, sure. Yeah. More than 15,000 people voted, for starters, and the results were that Kirk got the lion's share of the votes with 27%. And actually, that's not a lion's share at all, because it's actually a pretty dead heat between Kirk, Janeway, Sisko, and Picard. Janeway came in with 23% of the votes, Sisko got 21%, and Jean-Luc Picard got 20%. And then poor little Captain Archer gets only 9%. And so you're telling me that you think this is flipped around and that, you, in your opinion, Archer would be the most likely to survive a zombie apocalypse, yes?
Not even the most likely, Char. He did it on the screen. How can people... This shows to me how many fans have never watched Enterprise. Impulse is an episode in which they go to a Vulcan ship full of Vulcan zombies.
This is true. Yeah. Okay, he's you make it. A really good case here. Yeah. Well, these polls are always kind of biased. And actually, this is probably one of the closest ones I have seen is in terms of not one person just taking a massive landslide lead over all of the others because Janeway fans, as they did for a very long time, just dominated no matter what the question was. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's phrase it a different way. If you were a zombie, Char, which captain would you most not want to see coming at you? Which captain would scare you the most?
Ooh.
The picture I put on here is Janeway from Macrocosm. And I have to say, if I were a zombie, I think Janeway from Macrocosm is the one captain that would make me run for the escape pods.
It's true. You do not mess with the Janeway. And especially if she is deprived of her coffee because she... Just stay out of the way and let her get it because it can be very bad news if she's been deprived.
If she spots you, if you're a group of zombies, and she spots you coming out of the mess hall with all of the coffee that Neelix has stockpiled, you are in trouble.
You've got some problems. Yeah, for sure. Now, that begs the question, of course, who do you think would be the weakest if you were in a zombie apocalypse? Like, who would you, whose brains would you want to eat?
Oh, whose brains would I want to eat?
That's say you're a zombie and you're looking
for
a meal.
For me, which captain would be the weakest in a zombie apocalypse and which captain's brains would I most want to eat? Those are two totally different questions.
Oh, okay. Well, please explain.
Well, I would want to eat Picard's brains because I think he's the smartest of them all. And hopefully I would absorb some knowledge as I digested his brains. Boy, we really have a Halloween theme going today, don't we, Sean?
We really do. Yeah, this is perfect.
Who would be the weakest against a zombie apocalypse? You know, I have to say probably Picard again, because he would try to negotiate with the zombies, and you can't negotiate with zombies. You know, Janeway is just gonna blow him away right
away. That's right. She's got the phaser rifle ready to go, whereas you're right, Picard is just going to try and be diplomatic about it and negotiate, and then by the time he's done with his speech, he's gone.
Right.
The Enterprise turned around and gone.
Oh, they've already eaten him. Okay.
Yeah,
I thought he was
going to
do the Picard maneuver and fly away.
Oh, now he never had a chance.
So Sisko would punch the zombies in the face. Mm-hmm. We know that. And Kirk would find some kind of a creative way to trap the zombies.
Maybe do some Kirk foo as well.
Okay.
Some fight scenes.
Yeah. Now, there is one thing, though. If you're on the Enterprise-D, you do have Guinan, and she can do the Guinan self-defense.
Now, that's
posture.
Pretty scary.
Yeah.
Does that ward off zombies, do you think? I mean, it wards off cues.
Yeah. I think it works on... It's kind of universal.
Hmm. So actually, the best candidate, never mind any of these captains, Guinan is the one that you want to have on your side because she's going to survive the zombie apocalypse the best.
Well, she's very, very old, Char. I'm sure she has survived some sort of zombie apocalypse in the past.
She's probably survived many of them. And not just the Borg.
Right.
Because they too, some people think that they're zombies. They're,
Okay, now it's good that you brought that up because I will say here that Picard is fourth out of five on this poll.
Mm-hmm.
And I made the case that Archer should be first on this poll based on the actual question on StarTrek.com.
Mm-hmm.
I think Picard should be second because the Borg are like, especially the early Borg are like zombies. I guess you could say maybe he didn't really survive because he was turned into Locutus. But then when you get the first contact... He managed to get through that, so.
Okay, so I think you have to make the distinction then where you have TV show Picard. He's going to get his brains eaten and he's a goner before he has a chance to open his mouth. But First Contact Picard has a chance because he too, like Janeway, is breaking out the compression phaser rifles and going about the ship ready to shoot.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is a multifaceted question. There's a lot of depth to it. A lot of things you have to consider.
You know, I think that at StarTrek.com, when they wrote this question, I'm not sure they fully realized the box they were opening up.
They had no idea.
All right. So that was an interesting poll. I still think that Archer should be first on this poll because he's the only captain of the five who actually was chased around a ship by zombies and got out alive. So there you go. We'll put a link in the show notes to the actual poll if you want to go see the results over there. And let us know what you think. You can find us on Twitter at Trek FM. Come over to Facebook to our listeners group, the Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L. Just type that into the search bar and we'll let you into that closed group that's just for listeners. And let us know who you think would survive longest in a zombie attack. All right. Char, the new iPhones are out and they're big.
Yep.
And I don't have one yet. I'm hoping to get one maybe early next year. Got a few other things going on right now that don't make it possible for me to get rid of my rapidly aging 4S, which locks up for 3 minutes if I try to take a photo sometimes. But I'm hoping to get a new one sometime soon. And when I do, I'm going to want to put some new wallpaper on it. And in an article over on TrekNews.net, designer Gedeon Maho, I may be mispronouncing that name, has created some great Elcars wallpaper for everyone.
Yeah, this is really beautiful, actually. If you take a look at the image over on TrekNews.net, I would love to see this actually on the iPhone 6 Plus because I imagine with that bigger display, it really shines through. And I, too, have not upgraded to a 6 yet. I'm not sure if I'm going to either. I have the 5S.
Okay.
So
well,
I could probably go another year.
Yeah.
So this is, I don't know, I think this is pretty darn cool. And if I did have the 6, I would definitely put this as my wallpaper.
Yeah, it looks really, really nice. It's very well done. You know, I've seen a lot of Elcar's wallpapers or interfaces created and for websites as well. I'm not a fan. It feels like so many Star Trek fans, they want to do the Elcar's thing. And I think it looks cool on screen, but it's difficult to do it well, I find. To really make it look polished, especially on a website, it's very difficult. Something like a wallpaper isn't as difficult because you're actually creating an image, right? But on a website where you have actual elements that have to come together in the browser.
Yeah, the functionality.
All, it's a lot tougher to do. I prefer just more straightforward design. But I will say that what the designer has created here looks really, really nice. And there's actually a quote from him there on TrekNews.net. He says, "I've been a huge fan of Star Trek production designer Michael Okuda since day one, and this project was my way of saying thank you for the wonderful futuristic operating system that next-gen fans know and love as Elcars. With the iPhone 6 Plus approaching the size of actual pads from the next generation, it only made sense to bring this amazing aesthetic to the palm of our hands."
Very nice.
I am curious, though, as an operating system, how functional Elcars would be in reality.
Yeah, it's one thing to play the keys like a piano and not really know, like have to be conscious of what you're doing, like the actors do on set. To actually use it, though, I think would be a really cumbersome pain in the ass.
It might be.
Well, just because it's teeny buttons, for one thing.
Well, and also it's like tiles. I mean, anyone who's tried to suffer through using Windows 8 on a desktop computer that doesn't have a touch screen for sure would know how difficult that is. This wallpaper here, though, I love the attention to detail. Look down in the corner at the camera button. You know, now that's something that he cannot move, the placement of the camera icon himself, but he's perfectly lined it up so that it actually looks like it's part of the Elcars interface.
Yeah, that is one thing I definitely appreciate is that it does integrate the functionality with the design. Mm-hmm. And like we've just been saying, I think that's a lot more difficult on a much more complex operating system. With this, though, I think it totally works. It's just simple enough. It's got just enough elements to make it cool, but not complicated. It's still as user-friendly as the iPhone interface itself.
Absolutely. So, Char, what I want to ask you and the listeners is about wallpapers in general. You know, we want to do some new wallpapers here at Trek FM. It's been a while since we've done any new ones.
That's true, yeah.
What kind of wallpaper would you want to see, Char, if you're going to, you know, have a Star Trek theme on your phone? What What are you missing right now that you want?
Oh, well, you know, to be honest, I'll tell you what I did do with my current wallpaper. And that's actually, that's the answer to my question here is I found a photo of Admiral Janeway, who it's one of the covers of the German Voyager relaunch novels.
Oh, those are great.
And then reworked it to include a few more elements like Voyager and the Delta Flyer and just made it really pretty. And then that is my wallpaper on my iPhone right now. I would like to see more of, and I know we can't do this because of copyright, but I'd love to see more of the continued relaunch novel verse illustrations, because the new Deep Space Nine is gorgeous. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Voyager relaunch books, especially the ones in Germany, they do such a beautiful job. They would make fantastic wallpapers.
Yeah, CrossCult does just such a great job with their cover designs.
But what I'm actually thinking is maybe, I wonder if we could do something with Star Trek Online, because they too are expanding the Star Trek universe. It's considered canon. And you know me, I'm a Voyager girl. They're doing the Delta Quadrant chapter soon to come out. They've got all the wonderful voices of Jerry Ryan and Robert Picardo, among others, coming out for this. And visually, it's just gorgeous.
You know, I'm worried about that on Star Trek Online because, you know, when you, like, you get things out of, you know, prize capsules and stuff out of vending machines in the stores, mm-hmm. you know, and there's this one thing that you want, but most of the capsules have this other thing in them. Like, they make like a thousand of this thing and then 10 of the other, right? Mm-hmm. I'm worried that in Star Trek Online and the Delta Quadrant storyline, the lockboxes that you find, I'm afraid that most of them are just going to be full of Leola root.
Oh, you know, I didn't think about that. I haven't actually played Star Trek Online yet. And if that ends up being the case, I'm going to lose interest quickly.
Unless your character is a Talaxian, in which case you've hit the mother load.
In which case you wouldn't at least, mind as much, maybe.
All right. So for listeners, I'd like to know what you would like to see with wallpaper, keeping in mind that, as Char said, there are many things we can't do because of intellectual property and copyright. But, you know, I'm a designer. Char's a designer. We have lots of designers and illustrators involved in the network, and we'd like to come up with some new wallpapers for everyone. And, you know, playing off of things that we talk about on the shows, as well as just other things from the Star Trek universe that you'd like to see. So let us know. Again, you can do that in the Babel Conference, our closed listeners group there on Facebook, or hit us up on Twitter at TrekFM, or go to our website, trek.fm/contact, and send us a message through there as well with your ideas, and we'll see what we can put together. And then we'll put a link in the show notes to this story on treknews.net, so you can go over there and grab this great Elkars wallpaper. Char, we have one more story in news today. This one I found interesting, although I don't know how much stock we can actually put in the results based on how they were gathered. But this asks the question, where does your state rank in Star Trek popularity? And it was done by a site called the Movoto blog. And on their site, they say, we strive to create unique and most importantly, fun real estate related stories. So I don't, are they going to have some Star Trek themed houses listed soon? I don't know exactly why they pulled out this particular idea.
I'm thinking, like, do they want people to decide which state they want to live in based on the results they get of this map? So I'm looking at it right now.
Would you want to move to a state where everyone hates Star Trek?
Well, you know, they do make a point where, no, I would not. But the data, the way they gathered it, and honestly, any way they would have done this would probably be complete BS, just because right. It can't be accurate. That would be really tough to do. But what they did...
Unless you had the money to actually conduct a real survey and surveyed 100,000 people by phone or questionnaire or something.
We can't do that. That would cost time and money. And so, you know, this is more like the BuzzFeed version where it's all just, you know, candy, basically.
So tell us, how did they gather the numbers here?
Well, the quote they say from the article that they published, they say, "We turned to everyone's favorite social media site, Facebook, and checked out what percent of a state's population liked each of the major franchises." It's very scientific.
It's very scientific.
Yes. Yeah. So take that results? For what it is.
And what were the results, Char?
Well, interesting. topping the list at number one is Oregon. Okay. And I never would have thought that. No offense to any fans in Oregon, but
yeah.
Okay.
I know there are a lot of fans there, of course, and we know a lot of them ourselves.
Sure.
We have listeners on the network from Oregon. But to be number one of all 50 states, that surprised me a little bit as well, because you also have to consider population of each state and the fact that anywhere you go, there are, you know, a large percentage of the population loves Star Trek.
This is true. Now, number two makes a little more sense to me, and that is Alaska, where honestly, in the winter months, you probably have nothing better to do than watch TV because you're not going to go outside.
Okay, that's why it makes sense to you. It makes sense to me
as
well,
but
not for that reason. For me, I just know that in Alaska, they're all keeping their eyes on the Russians. They're all watching Chekhov.
Oh, well, they can see them from their decks, right? So
exactly, yeah.
But then I'm thinking, if that's the case, then why is North Dakota not number three? Because I tell you what, when it's winter here, it's very easy to park yourself in front of the TV after a long day of work and just not get up until it's time to go to bed.
Mm-hmm.
Which I hate to say it, but sometimes I do.
So when you look down the poll, a few things stand out to me. Okay, which states have the largest population? Because I think that this poll probably just boils down to the states with the largest population. Because if you just go out on the street and you ask 100 people, do you like Star Trek? You know, many, many people love Star Trek. And so the more people you have, the more people are going to, the numbers are going to add up. Nevertheless, on this poll, New York is number 31.
Mm-hmm.
California is number 33. And Texas is number 35.
Yeah, that's a little bit of a shocker. That tells me they're not doing this per capita.
Right.
And that, maybe it's because there's so many other things to do there.
What we need are the numbers of how many people in each state use Facebook.
That's another thing, right? Maybe people in California are too darn busy to really care about Facebook because there's actually things you can go out and do in California or Texas or New York.
Unlike North Dakota.
Yeah. And so they don't care. They might like Star Trek still, but they're not necessarily going to be on Facebook. They might not necessarily be liking everything on Facebook either.
Right. So as you know, out of whack as the results here might be, that's just kind of a fun thing to talk about. And, you know, what it does tell us is which state has the most Facebook users who like Star Trek. So that's kind of interesting to know, I suppose, especially for us since we, you know, promote our stuff on Facebook. I think what I'd also like to know, and again, this is from you and the listeners as well, is how popular is Star Trek in your state? This is your own impression, you know, of the surroundings. You know, do you have conventions in your state? Do you have a lot of friends who like Star Trek, who talk about Star Trek a lot? Char, seriously, in North Dakota, I mean, what is the atmosphere like there for Star Trek?
Actually, there is a pretty decent sci-fi scene in the Fargo area, especially because we have a couple of conventions that occur here annually. And then over next door in Minnesota, there's even more. And I know a lot of people who go back and forth between the two states to do all of those conventions. And so actually, it's not that bad. But in my home state of Wyoming, which ranked number 10 in this poll, I don't know what to call it. It's not
I think I called it
study. It's I don't know. It's number 10, whereas maybe it's because people are watching Star Trek because they have no conventions to go to, because the closest ones really are in Salt Lake and in Denver, and those are both cities several hours away from where I grew up in Casper. So,
For me, it's hard for me to say because I've been gone from the U.S. for a very long time, but I'm originally from Alabama. According to this map that we're looking at right here, I think Alabama should be number one, actually, because it says number 47 on it right there.
Hey, you get points for that, right? You should.
When I was there, you know, I mean, I don't really, I thought the atmosphere was kind of normal. You know, people got excited when DS9 premiered. I remember people pouring into bars all around Birmingham to watch the DS9 premiere together. And the same thing happened when Voyager premiered. Wow. I remember having a small science fiction convention in Tuscaloosa, of all places, and I met John DeLancey there. We had the 30th anniversary, the official 30th anniversary year convention was in Alabama in Huntsville, because the Space Center is there.
Sure, yeah.
And, you know, I felt it was fairly normal, certainly more so than, you know, 47. I know that we have a number of listeners from Alabama on the network who talk to me regularly. So, I don't know. I'm just curious to know, wherever you are, if you're listening to us talk about this, I'd love to know, what's the state of Star Trek in your state? What's the atmosphere like around you? So let us know that. We've already told you how to contact us a number of times here. But again, our Facebook group, Trek FM on Twitter, those are great ways to contact us and let us know, because I'm really curious. I'm so isolated from Star Trek in America, which is the largest audience for Star Trek, being here in Japan. I'm so isolated from it. It is hard for me to get a feel for what things are really like on the ground, as they would say these days. And we'll put a link in the show notes if you'd like to see this over on treknews.net. Again, they have the actual map there. All right, so that's all we have in news, Char. We're going to be joined shortly by our friend Jenny Zell, as well as Landru from Standard Orbit, to talk about Cat's Paw. And yes, we are going to talk about Chekhov's hair a little bit in the discussion
today.
We
must.
Before we do that, though, we need to tell everyone about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. As we tell you each week, Audible is the best source for audiobooks that you'll find anywhere online. They've got 150,000, 60,000, 70,000, I don't know how many at this point. They have so many audiobooks waiting for you there. Lots of great Star Trek books. And as a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. All you need to do is go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up. If you decide not to stick with Audible, you'll get to keep that book, so there's nothing to lose. But when you sign up, it does really help us keep the Ready Room coming to you every week. Now, we usually recommend a Star Trek book to you, but this week I'm going off the board, Char, because of the StarTrek.com poll that we talked about at the top of news here about the zombie attack. I'd like to recommend World War Z, An Oral History of the Zombie War.
Fitting.
Now, this is written by Max Brooks, son of Mel Brooks, and many people know it because they did the movie version recently.
Right.
But the audio version, which is the version I know, I actually have not seen the movie, but the audio version is awesome. I've had it ever since it came out. And it's narrated by Max Brooks, Alan Alda, John Turturro, Rob Reiner, Mark Hamill, Alfred Molina, Simon Pegg, Henry Rollins, and Martin Scorsese. And it's done like it's a documentary, like a History Channel documentary, where they're all giving their accounts of a war, except it's the zombie apocalypse.
This sounds really interesting, and there's some great names there for narration. This sounds like a lot of fun.
It is a lot of fun because the way they present it, it's like it really happened to them. And, you know, they've all had this traumatic experience in World War Z. And you've got like the History Channel people interviewing them and they're giving their account. So it's not even your normal audiobook. You know, it's not just someone reading the book. It's more like a, it's not exactly like a radio drama, but it is more like that in that sense. So I highly recommend this book.
This sounds very cool. I'm going to have to get this. I'm not even a big, huge zombie fan. Like, I don't watch Walking Dead or anything that, but this sounds like fun.
Yeah, I'm the same. I'm not a big fan of the zombie stuff, but this one is really interesting. So I highly recommend it. And you can get it absolutely free by trying Audible. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. And we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network.
Thank you.
TV series have Halloween specials, but Star Trek is not one of them. Of course, it isn't like they didn't try. The original series did its part. The later series just didn't follow suit. On October 27, 1967, Kirk, Spock, and Bones got quite a fright with the airing of Cat's Paw. It was the first episode produced for Season 2, yet it was held until the week of Halloween. And today we're going to talk about this fun and unusual episode. And to help us do that, we're joined, as always, for TOS Week by co-host of Standard Orbit, Drew Stewart. Hello, Landrew.
Joy to you, friends.
Glad to have you back with us. And also, we welcome back for the first time in a long while, formerly of Dork Trek and presently of Mouthy Broadcast, our friend Jenny Zell. Jenny, welcome back.
How's it going, everybody? Thanks for having me back.
For the record, Jenny, I've been trying to get you back off and on for quite a while, but you have a crazy schedule, so I'm glad that we threw out something there that you apparently could not resist, a story about skeletons and black cats and really, yes, really close-up camera shots of bald men.
Yeah, and the guy at the beginning with the close-up of his mouth and, yeah, his space cold sores. That was what drew me in.
Is that what got you?
Something for everybody.
Wasn't the giant cat walking down the cardboard hallway? That's what always gets me in this show.
That was one of the highlights of this episode. Yes, and the S&M dungeon. But I think I'm getting ahead of us a little bit here.
Just yes. A little bit.
All right, so it is. Halloween is coming up, and so I thought it would be a lot of fun to talk about Cat's Paw, even though we'll be a few days ahead of that. One of my traditions for Halloween every year is actually to watch this episode on Halloween. Does that make me insane?
Yes.
Yeah,
just weird.
Now, I was watching it for this episode. I'm like, why am I watching? Oh yeah, podcast. I'm like,
you know what, Drew? Same thing happened to me. The last time I watched this episode, I was doing a drunk cast with Matt Hansen of the Delta Quadrant fame, and we put it on Mike and Max's Commentary Track Stars feed, and it was probably a good thing that I watched that drunk. Now it's kind of setting in why.
I'm going to have to go back and find that and listen to it, because I was just doing running commentary the whole time, and, you know, I needed a drink.
I wasn't even drinking, yeah, and I found it almost impossible to follow along. I'm like, what's the moral of this story? Imagination is bad?
Women are evil.
I'm so confused.
It's just a fun, spooky Halloween story, I think.
Spooky?
Think about it. I mean, we're used to so much more stuff today. Think about it in 1967. You're in space. You're around this planet. There's a dungeon. You're being chained to the wall. There's a skeleton guy who, Jenny, you may not like the episode, but apparently you like the guy that was in the dungeon before, because you've got him right behind you right there on camera.
Yes, I just stole his skull and hung it on my wall.
That's terrifying.
I call him Bones.
No, Chris. It's funny because it's Bones.
Oh. Now we know how he got the name.
All he's got is his bones.
Yes, that shot of McCoy looking at that skeleton is perhaps the greatest screenshot of all mankind. Bones.
That's true.
Looking
that should
at
be
bones.
Mm hmm. Yeah. I think if I were a kid watching this back in the 1960s for the first time, maybe I wouldn't think this was so bad.
Right.
Maybe, like, if I were 8, because back then, like, I was watching the animated series when I was 8 years old. Like, it aired for a summer and I managed to catch it. I didn't think that was so bad either. Maybe I had poor taste, or maybe it was just the fact that I could accept it, but I think it's awful now. Back then, oh, maybe not so bad.
I mean, sure, the cat and stuff is exciting.
Well, the animated series has some good stories. The animation itself is just a little bit subpar, I would say.
Even remastered.
But this episode, you know, sure, the cat is scary and the dungeon is scary and stuff, but then it turns into the temptation of the Enterprise crew. Like, look at all these jewels, and look at this hot woman. And I think it would slow down a lot for a kid for them to be engrossed by it long enough to appreciate the Halloween part.
Yeah.
And maybe adults in the 60s weren't as, I don't know, sophisticated? I don't want to bash the adults. Well,
I don't think
'60s,
it's, I don't think you would say that about the people of the '60s necessarily. But as far as television viewing goes, I think the audience was less sophisticated in their taste than what we are now, because we've had so much television for so many decades that it's viewed very differently.
Right.
Yeah.
Our standards are a little higher nowadays, I think, is what you're saying.
But I can't see the adults that would appreciate the middle part appreciating the opening and closing parts, while the kids who appreciated the opening and closing parts probably didn't appreciate the middle part. It's kind of spotty, this mm-hmm. episode.
Sure, sure. Well, a quick synopsis of this episode, as we always do here on the Ready Room, if you haven't seen it or haven't seen it in a long time. The Enterprise enters orbit of planet Pyrus 7, and two crew members, well, this crew member beams up and he's dead, Jackson, and he almost looks like a mannequin when he comes up, doesn't he? It's almost like something out of like an early Doctor Who episode. Think about the one with the mannequins
he's an
that come to life. Yeah. But he's speaking, and so it's so spooky, and he's dead, and then they go down to the planet, and they're greeted by witches reciting bad poetry. And then there's smoke everywhere.
That is scary.
I will say the remastered, the smoke and the landscape and the castle and the planet itself look really fantastic in the remastered. That stuff mm-hmm. looks really, really nice. But they go down there and they go inside the castle, and then they encounter these two aliens who, well, someone who appears to be pretty much human, who has a black cat, which turns out to be another one of these aliens, which are known as Ornithoids. And we do see them again on displays in Deep Space Nine in four different episodes, where they're shown on Elkar's displays for the school students. But they always reminded me of, like, it's like if the Fraggle at the end of the episode, it's like if Fraggles got shrunk in the sun.
I like that better than what I came up with, which was sort of like, you know, Toucan Sam made out of pipe cleaner, and then they just set it on fire a teeny bit so it would right. smoke a little bit.
Probably what they actually did, Char.
Yeah, I know. I was being too realistic. I like your description better.
I immediately went to the Martians from Sesame Street.
Oh, yeah.
Meep, meep, meep.
Yeah, that's good.
I got a kick out of that video you posted.
So these aliens that are there, they start trying to tempt the crew. They lock Kirk, Spock, and Bones in the dungeon. There's a skeleton there. Kirk gets to make out with one of the aliens as she takes different female forms. She tries to attack everyone as a giant cat. And ultimately, one of the other aliens lets everyone escape because they were explorers from another galaxy, apparently, that came over. But it's never really clear what their plan was, why they were really here, or why they had an interest in the Enterprise crew and what they would have done after that, except that they do threaten to destroy the entire world at one point when they're unhappy with Kirk's reaction. In the end, they get to go back up to the ship and they leave. That's the basic premise of the episode. Does that make sense to you guys?
As much sense as the episode made. Yeah.
All right, good.
Yeah. I think you just proved that the episode really lacks direction. What was the point of this?
I forgot to mention the jewels on the plates on the table.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, and the massive dinner, too. I think they blew the whole budget just on the table of food that they had.
And then it disappears and is replaced with cheap plastic jewelry for some reason.
Or maybe that was just craft service for the day, Char. They just combined everyone eating on the set with an actual scene. They just put
just
it on a nice
table.
Just
come to the banquet
table
and eat.
Mm, so they had the caterer come in and then it's like macaroni pictures? Mm-hmm. What? Okay, I didn't realize that's how they did things. Whatever.
Speaking of the table and all the jewels on the table, in the remastered, there's that scene where Bones holds one of the gems up and he goes, "These look real." And I'm thinking, no, they don't.
Yeah, they look like the Kmart Blue Light Special,
HD,
man.
No,
well, they do look like real plastic.
They do look like real plastic,
I guess.
They sure do.
They really do. All right. Well, let's start talking about the story a little bit here. The first thing I wanted to talk about is the fact that this really is a Halloween episode for Star Trek. There are a lot of spooky episodes throughout Star Trek. Of course, we get things like schisms on The Next Generation. we get Impact Nor on Deep Space Nine, where they go to the like derelict twin of Tarok Nor, where it's actually very spooky inside.
Threshold on Voyager.
Well, Threshold, yeah, okay.
That's not maybe scary, that's funny.
Scary for other reasons. No, on Voyager, you have The Haunting of Deck 12, where Neelix tells ghost stories to the kids.
Yeah, which again is not very scary.
Right. But you have kind of spooky episodes along the way, but you never have something that feels like it was really made for Halloween week. And this episode was the first episode produced for season two, but they did hold it until Halloween week. And they mention Trick or Treat at least twice in the episode. They mention Halloween. They mention myths and Satan and demons and goblins. And, you know, the only thing missing basically is I wanted it to be when they're chained up in the dungeon that Sulu and Scotty come in and they're holding like little orange plastic jack-o'-lantern baskets and actually say trick or treat.
That would have been fantastic.
We need to make that happen.
That was much cleaner than my version of how that scene went.
Okay.
Where they, oh boy.
Zed comes in and he brings the gimp, you know, that it was crazy.
I don't want to know what all that transmuter is capable of.
So many things.
So what did you guys think about the idea, though, of a Star Trek Halloween episode?
I'm not keen on it. I think that with all the talk that, you know, in the 23rd century, we're beyond religion, we're beyond all this stuff, I think would be beyond Halloween. I doubt that Kirk would know anything about trick-or-treat. Halloween is great. I love dressing up. I usually dress up as a red shirt. You know, it's fun. It's fun to dress up like Star Trek. But it's just an excuse. I mean, I don't think that in 50 years or 100 years we're going to be doing that. Especially not, you know, 300 years from now. It's, yeah. I'm not keen on the whole Halloween idea. The having episodes that you really only feel right watching once a year doesn't mm-hmm. seem right. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the whole rest of the series you can go through and they're like, oh, I'll save Cat's Paw for Halloween. Well, no, you gotta keep going.
See, I didn't have a problem with it in general because they kind of do little theme episodes all the time, like where they have the Wild West episode or they have the World War II episode mm-hmm. or all these various things. I see your point about Halloween not really being a thing 300 years from now, though, because it is already kind of being phased out in a lot of cities. People just don't really do it anymore. So I don't know.
Which is interesting because here in Japan, every year you see more and more Halloween decor, especially in stores, but even people starting to put stuff in their windows and all, because obviously Halloween is not an event or a holiday in Japan. But I've been in Japan now for, 18 years, I guess it is. And I remember that originally there was nothing. Like, you didn't see very much Halloween stuff around. And now I see it everywhere, especially even right now. It starts earlier, it seems, here, because we don't put Christmas things in the stores in July like they do in the States these days. So we actually have, a period of time where Halloween stuff is around. And then the Christmas stuff comes around.
That's interesting because I agree here it's on the decline. I see less and less of it every year. And I think certainly where I live, the weather dictates how many trick-or-treaters mm-hmm. go out. And so it could be either like a crazy year, a crazy good year in terms of seeing a lot of people, or an absolute bust. And then suddenly you have, you know, like 5 bags of candy that you have to find a way to eat through.
I'm sure it's really hard for you to find a way to get through
that
candy.
Is that a problem?
Right, sure.
Well, it's a problem for my blood sugar after a while. Diabetic coma, diabetes. Anybody? Yeah, diabetes.
Just make sure you buy candy that you really want to eat yourself so that when you don't give
no,
it out,
I do, yeah. Just in case.
Oh, that's a good
I really
idea.
Do.
Like, no candy corn.
No.
Oh, hell no. No, none of that. None of that. It's Reese's at my house because if there are any leftovers, they go to me.
The only problem with that, though, is that I always eat it before the kids even show up. If I buy stuff that I really
sorry, need. Kids, there's no candy left. I ate it all.
Just like chocolate all over my face.
I don't know what happened to all the candy.
About to pass out.
The witches remind me of something that you would come up with yourself if you're trying to create a haunted house. Or when I was a kid, when I was in middle school especially, the house I lived in, we had this very long and windy sidewalk that went from the main street up to the house, and it was kind of uphill as well. And we had trees growing on the sides of it too. So my friends and I, we would go all out on Halloween and create not a haunted house per se, but like a haunted tunnel that you had to go through to get to our front door. We would line both sides of it with black hefty trash bags and, you know, glow in the dark paint, spider webs, spooky music and everything. And I feel kind of like that at the beginning of this episode.
You probably had more budget than they did.
Did you have people chanting, no?
I'm pretty sure we were doing it ourselves.
Fair enough.
I mean, we also did it to the Domino's pizza guy when it wasn't even Halloween. We would hide in the bushes and pop out when he pulled into the driveway.
So you had silly putty attached to your face like these witches did? I wasn't even watching Remastered. I was watching the good old SD version, and I'm just like, that makeup is terrible.
It was truly hideous. Like, they just, I don't know, they just put their face into a cake.
Yeah, like Mrs. Yeah.
And they're all, exactly, all kind of floaty at different rates, and they're like, ooh, we're scary.
But do you think maybe it works because it's the idea that, first of all, you want them to be very creepy and scary witches that would maybe make the crew go, I think we should just get out of here. And also, you've got these little fraggle aliens who really don't know much about us, and somehow we're probing people's minds, so they're not very good at reproducing it. You know, these aliens, they haven't yet gotten jobs at Industrial Light and Magic. You know, they've just arrived
really,
in our
think
galaxy.
Think of the people that they've scanned. You know, Scotty and Sulu. Really? This whole thing with the, we probe their subconscious and they're scared of witches and castles. I'm like, Sulu's not scared of witches and castles. What?
Yeah, he'd sword fight in there, man.
Maybe they were trying to scan Chekhov's brain and the information just wasn't coming clearly through that giant wig that he had on.
Now that makes sense.
Please, can we talk about this wig?
Right, okay, so let's go ahead and talk about Chekhov a little bit. So a lot of people are surprised, people who aren't familiar with the fragmented production and release schedule of the original series are often surprised that this is the first episode shot with Walter Koenig as Chekhov, because it's the seventh episode, I believe it is, sixth episode of the second series to air.
Six.
But it was the first one produced. So you've already seen Chekhov by the time you get to this, and here he seems different because they're his first scenes. He doesn't really know who the character is yet. They won't even say his name until 2/3 of the way through the episode. And his hair hadn't grown out enough yet to have the monkey's haircut. And so he's actually wearing a wig in this episode.
I could not tell.
Yeah, well,
I couldn't even tell. It was
shocker.
I looked at that wig and I said, that looks real.
As in a real wig.
Exactly.
Well, look,
even
after his hair starts growing out, it's not like that hairstyle looks good in the first place.
In the 60s, it was awesome.
Right, that's true. Takes a little while for it to come into its own. But yeah, this wig definitely does stand out in this episode because, boy, that's a lot of unstyled hair.
The place where it's most noticeable to me, I especially enjoyed watching this time because I was just specifically watching the wig this time because I've seen this episode so many times, I have to find something new to look at. There's the scene on the bridge where they keep cutting back and forth and back and forth between DeSalle and Chekhov and DeSalle and Chekhov. And DeSalle is like, he's like the classic chiseled 1960s Hollywood actor. He's got that look of the men of the time. And then there's Chekhov in that wig. And they keep going back and forth and back and forth. And it just makes the wig feel even more ridiculous.
You're absolutely right.
So if you're, you know, listening to this, do it. Go put this in. Go to that scene and just watch just the back and forth over and over. And when you're done, rewind and do it again.
Okay, I'm going to go on Tumblr right after we're done recording this and making sure that there is an animated GIF.
There must be. And if there's not, then we need to make one.
And it just goes back and this forth must happen. Faster and faster and faster.
So, Drew, what do you think about Chekhov, though? I mean, you are the co-host of our original series show. You're talking about Chekhov all the time. How do you feel about him here, his first time on screen, and how the character is thrown into the series?
He's definitely underutilized. I feel like in the first episode we see him in, which I think is Who Moans for Adonis, you know, he's got the whole character down. He's got the talking about how awesome Russia is. And,
well, he's even got a girlfriend in that episode, right?
Right. He's all over it. But in this one, you can tell that Walter is trying to find his feet, and it's just not working at this point. You could tell the hair, the wig, is holding him down. It's
literally
holding him back.
It's weighting him down. It's destroying his talent as an actor.
They take the wig off. They're like, Walter, that was brilliant. Put the wig back on. Cut.
You know, I really haven't watched the original series episodes in order.
Get out.
I kind of skip around. So
yeah, I do that too.
This was it wasn't really out of the question for me to just kind of see him as, like, you know, he's just kind of there and out of place a little bit. So, but I've always liked him, you know, except for the wig.
Except for the wig, yeah. What about him as a new character? Because with the first season, obviously, he wasn't there. I mean, he was on the ship. Mm-hmm. You can ask Khan about that. He was on the ship, but we didn't get to see him on the show. It's like everyone knows the story, of course, about George Takei being off shooting the film, and so he couldn't be there, and they brought Walter Keane again and all that story. But it was also a bit of a play for... Seriously, the Monkees were really popular at the time, and they're kind of going after that demographic. And do what do you think about the character? I mean, just showing up on the show in the second season.
Okay, well, the whole thing about the Monkees and wanting a Davy Jones lookalike, I kind of remember watching the original series when I was fairly young, 6 to 8 years old, and I fell in love with Chekhov because Davy Jones was my very first celebrity crush.
That was fantastic.
I kid you not.
Me too.
And
high
so
five.
The fact that,
oh, high five.
High five. Webcam high five. Yeah, like the fact that he was a, you know, Davy Jones kind of Russian wannabe guy, it worked on me, at least back then. And so I was all about it. Of course, later on, getting to know the actual character of Chekhov, I do like the idea that he is this young and green ensign. You know, the
well,
proto Harry Kim,
green,
if you will.
Char. He tells you that in this episode.
Yeah, that's true. He does. That's just how naive he is. He doesn't even know how naive he is.
He's so green, he doesn't know he's green.
That's right. At least Harry kind of knew.
All right. Well, Chekhov, it just cracks me up in this particular episode. It's just the wig. It's pretty much the wig.
Yeah, it's all about the wig when it comes to Chekhov
sweating.
In this one.
Like, I don't know if he's sweating because Sylvia's holding the Enterprise over the candle or the wig is just really hot.
I think it was a little
I think
both.
For him, it's the wig. For everybody else, they just took a spray bottle and randomly misted
They're
everybody.
Like, Walter, do you need us to spritz you? No, I'm good. I'm good.
I'm fine, thank you.
Yeah, I'm fine. Gosh, is it hot in here?
Some ice water. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get on into the story here. Drew, you love the section title for this.
I
Meet
don't.
The Corroborator.
No, I specifically said not to mention it.
Oh. But come on now.
Well, that's exactly why he didn't mention it, Drew.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Deal with it.
So he's the first person we meet when they go into the castle. Now, the first of the aliens we meet is, of course, Sylvia as a cat.
Spoilers.
And the first thing I think of when I see Sylvia as the cat is whether she is friends with Isis and she hangs out with Isis. And then as I'm writing that down in my notes last night, I thought, oh, great. Now when I say that, I have to specify Gary Seven's cat from Assignment Earth, thanks to all the crazy news today with the group ISIS. Now we're talking about ISIS
right.
the cat.
We're not blaming this alien.
but this is, you know, this is one of two episodes in the original series where we have a character who has a sidekick who's a woman who turns herself into a black cat.
Gene Roddenberry.
Go figure. this is a metaphor, isn't it?
That women are bad luck. That's what it is.
Oh, is that what it is?
I don't think that's it, Drew. Don't make me go there.
Now, come on, Jenny, unleash.
No.
This is the wrong show.
This is a mouthy broadcast.
Oh, man. We'll have to discuss it there, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, Chris, I see in the notes that you have miscast Jeffrey Combs.
Oh.
Because you list him as the skeleton in the dungeon. No, he was the black cat in this episode.
Really? Okay. Does that mean he was also Sylvia?
He was one of... When Sylvia was changing forms.
He was all the women.
Okay. I thought that...
He was the one in the
Jeffrey
pants.
Jeffrey Combs. He can do anything.
This is true. He was the one in the
pants.
That
was Jeffrey Combs.
I just had flashbacks to Voyager's death wish and John DeLancey saying this line, the one in the pants, you know, the guy in the Jeep.
That's right. The one in the pants.
Oh, man.
I hope that's the episode title. So,
if you say it, it won't come true.
I'm sorry. Cut that out, please.
Because I thought that Antoinette Bauer played Sylvia, but apparently it was Jeffrey Combs.
He is everywhere.
Well, I think Jeffrey Combs is so talented that he was playing Antoinette Bauer playing Sylvia.
I see. That makes a lot of sense to me.
I would have cast him as the little pewter ship.
He's the pewter ship. He's both the pewter ship and the pewter ship inside the plastic cube.
Yeah.
Are you sure he wasn't the wig? Just put it out there.
Oh, see, that would have been great.
So you know, he might have been that too. I mean, anything's possible. Acting.
Oh, Chris is dying.
Well, let's talk about Korib himself a little bit here. So we get in there, and it almost reminds me of Trelane a bit, because here they are going down to a mysterious planet, and there's a castle.
Sulu's
kidnapped.
Weird
guy inside.
I mean, it's...
Yeah, that seems to, someone's been kidnapped, and there's this weird guy inside that seems to know all this stuff about them. And there's this man alone on a planet. I mean, that by itself is sort of a red flag to me. Like, why is there this weird guy by himself on a planet?
It's stranger danger. I mean, everybody knows that in this situation, this dude's going to be a creeper, and you stay away. It doesn't really matter what he's actually up to. You know it can't be good. Like, he could be the Unabomber. He could be, you know, I mean, he has a dungeon, so he could totally be into some really kinky S&M. I mean, you don't know. So if you go in there, you are getting what you deserve. You really are.
I think that this whole episode actually was a metaphor. Like, the castle was a metaphor for the white van that said free candy. Like, they were warning us away from trick-or-treating.
You're right.
Yeah,
you're
right.
He's a creeper.
I mean, it sounds like a joke, but actually, that makes a lot of sense. That is kind of what happens in here, isn't it?
That's the moral of this story. Right here. We got it.
The castle is the white van. Yeah.
Well, I think that...
But it turns out that he's actually the sane one of the two.
Yeah, that's saying something, isn't it?
You'd think...
Well, actually, you know, I think the way that he comes off at the end, he does seem like a reasonable person. I mean, he talks to Sylvia. He argues with Sylvia about how the way that they treat their subjects that they're observing is wrong. Like, we torture our subjects and all. We shouldn't be doing this. He seems like someone who's really at odds with the culture that he comes from.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe so. But still, it's not like he's trying to leave or anything either.
And we don't really get a good idea of what their culture is. Like, he says that we're supposed to observe and stuff, but it seems like Sylvia's more pokey.
Yeah, I did notice that he likes to watch. If that's what you mean
by
observing.
That's not what I meant.
Because he was.
No, that's exactly what you meant.
Yeah, he was kind of peeking through the wall when Sylvia was going after Kirk. And he seemed a little disappointed when it didn't happen. That's.
Wait a minute. I don't
remember that. He was waiting for more.
You have to go back and watch it again.
I'll have to watch it again, yeah. Because I didn't read it that way. I read it more like he and Sylvia are a couple or something, and he's jealous that she's making out with this human who's come along.
No, he wasn't jealous. They're swingers. It's the 60s.
That's true.
You've got this, Jenny.
Well, you know, he is on camera, which means he has a camera set up on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
Shooting across the room. That's how he himself was on camera.
This is true. It's true. I mean, it is just the two of them, right? I mean, they got to bring in other people to keep it spicy.
Yeah.
So I also got the impression that until Kirk and Spock and Bones especially show up there, until the Enterprise comes into orbit, that Quora maybe was the one that was taking, I don't want to say he was taking human form. We don't know who's been there before. There is a skeleton in the dungeon that looks like a human skeleton. They do mention that there have been ships who have come through and mapped this solar system before, and there's never been any life there. So they haven't been there all that long. But you get the impression that maybe Sylvia's just been hanging out as a cat and doing other things while this guy has had the run of the castle. He's probably got like a big screen TV set up. You know, he's watching the football. It's like he's got his lazy boy throne there.
But he pulled the castle from Sulu and Scotty. So they were just kind of, I believe that they were just in their Toucan Sam forms.
Well, if it came from Sulu, wouldn't it be a castle that's just covered with flowers and plants everywhere, and occasionally someone runs through fencing?
Yeah.
And then with Scotty,
yes, with their shirt
it
off.
Would be just, it would be a huge engine room, and every room in the castle would have libraries of tech manuals.
No, I was thinking booze.
You're right.
And booze. There would be the booze room, yeah.
Yes, and some scotch.
Definitely.
Maybe it's all from Jackson. So,
yeah, what's up with, what was Jackson maybe thinking about?
I don't know. But I do like, in all seriousness, I like that Jackson is kind of the through line. He's mm-hmm. like the reason why Kirk is being, like, this man is dead. That's how they end the episode. I really like that the red shirt who dies in this episode, you know, we know his name. He's Kirk's reason for, like, wanting revenge. And that's how they end the episode, on kind of a down note. Like, yeah, that was fun, but one of our people is dead. And like, that's how it ends. When I just wanted to point that out, that Kirk doesn't just throw red shirts at a problem. Well, all the time. But sometimes, you know, the point of the episode is Kirk takes it personally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the case in the original series. I think that it's another one of those situations where Kirk maybe gets a bad rap and TOS gets a bad rap, as like everyone's disposable if they're in a red shirt. I think it does matter to him. I mean, his crew is a family to him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes some of the things that he does with the yeomans a little bit creepy.
Making out at a Christmas party. Yeah, you all do that, right?
Yeah, you share a bath together. It's no big deal.
Wait, what?
But where I was going with Korob having the run in the castle is sometimes I feel like what may have happened here is that once Kirk shows up, Sylvia finds Kirk attractive, then she takes this female form, and that turns the table on Korob, and then he's no longer on the top. He's no longer able to control her and control their mission anymore. And Jenny's cracking up because I said he's no longer on top.
Oh, wow. I missed that.
That you did.
I did.
And he likes her to be in control. I know she's a dominatrix. I spotted it right from the beginning.
Well, she is. She definitely, yes. Yeah. That's where she goes. And like, that's there in her. And then Kirk comes along. She finds him attractive. She decides to start taking the form of all these women. And then she experiences this sensation. She's making out with Kirk. And then it just kind of snowballs from there, and we see her kind of go crazy with her mission. And then Korob finally realizes that he's got to do something, or else she's going to kill everyone, and then she's going to bring in the next people.
She's going to have her way with them and then move on. That's it. That's all that was on my mind out of that. I'm sorry. That's an awful takeaway.
Well, let's talk.
This was the point in the episode where I realized that I had no idea what was actually going on other than she was trying to get laid and he was trying to distract her to get some information about their mission or their plan or whatever that I
Kirk was trying to figure out their weakness.
Oh, well, it does become like a first contact situation for Starfleet at that point, right? Where
the line must Kirk be drawn here?
No.
Oh, not first contact, the show.
On this side of the dungeon and no farther. But no, Kirk tells them that, well, I'd like to hear more about your mission and your culture.
Okay.
So he's going to take that angle on it. Suddenly, in the middle of this, so it is almost like this episode doesn't know what it wants to be, right? Is it going to be a serious meeting new life forms and new civilizations? Is it going to be playing in a haunted house? Is it going to be let's slip a dominatrix show onto 1967 television and see if the network and the sensors figure out what we're doing?
Yeah, it's really trying to be all these things.
It is, yeah.
All things to all people.
Right.
A little something for everyone, just like Sylvia.
Right.
That's right. All the outfits.
Whatever you want me to be.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about Sylvia now. Landry, do you want to tell us what the title of this section is?
No.
Just kidding.
Well done, Chris.
What? Why?
It was so beautiful.
Why?
Look at Drew. He doesn't know what to say.
And he's speechless.
He's speechless.
I don't believe this. Okay. It's me and Jenny and Drew and Chris. And Chris is the one who makes Drew blush.
I'm actually kind of ashamed of us right now, Charlotte.
I'm ashamed
of
you.
I am too. Wow.
You know what's so awesome about our new meeting system? Is that the backup recording, it gives me two versions. It gives me an audio-only version, and it also records the video.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic.
Yay, screenshots!
I hope that's a screenshot. Her cheering and me going, oh, jeez.
Fantastic.
So let's talk about Sylvia a little bit here, because these outfit changes really cracked me up, especially the one where she says, I can be any woman you want me to be. And then it's the most hideous looking, like, it's like a flying squirrel pantsuit.
They can't get it right every time.
It was like the least attractive thing that I've seen her wear.
Only the 1960s would have come up with this. It's really ugly.
Jenny, which was your favorite look for Sylvia?
Oh, it was the shiny spacesuit looking thing. I don't know what you call that, but it was kind of almost David Bowie-esque.
That was my favorite as well, and it reminded me of the same thing that is in my notes. I kid you
yes!
not. Webcam high five!
Yeah!
Great minds. Fantastic.
I think this episode needs to be called hashtag webcam high five.
I think so.
That's at least the second one there.
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
All right. So polling you, Drew, what's your favorite Sylvia look?
I liked the second one. I don't know if it's the same one the ladies are talking about. It showed a lot of leg. I liked the leg.
I think mine was just the normal Sylvia, the kind of goth haunted house look Sylvia.
The Wicked Witch Sylvia.
Yeah.
I have an idea for you, Chris. You should make Sylvia paper dolls and have different outfits that you can cut out and put on her.
I like that. Yeah.
There you go.
Oh,
that's free.
We could do like Trek FM bonus material with that.
There we go. Everyone who donates $10 a month.
We're looking for types of merchandise we can create. That's a good one.
Yeah. Seriously. Oh, that's brilliant, Jenny.
You're welcome.
Good work.
You're welcome.
So we've already talked a lot about Sylvia and her approach to things. I mean, is there, what about within the, here's the question for you guys, within the context of original series women guests on the show. I mean, is there anything really unique about Sylvia here? I mean, Kirk makes out with her. He does it to save the ship, mm-hmm. which John Tenuto, I'm sure, would point out immediately. Kirk didn't go down to the planet looking for some woman to make out with.
He was just hoping.
Right.
Well, he's always hoping, Jenny.
Well, there's always hope with Kirk. No, I feel like she's just the flavor of the mm-hmm. week.
Yeah. I mean, she's not basically. Really a good villain. I mean, sure, she's the bad guy of the episode, but I don't think she stands out. Like, I had completely forgotten that she was the bad person in the episode. So, yeah, she's just forgettable to me. Except when she's in her giant cat form.
Yeah. And she doesn't look like Lady Gaga. So she doesn't even have that kind of like costume originality going for her.
Right.
And the fact that she turns into a cat isn't even original. So she's got nothing.
But a giant cat.
A giant cat.
Giant cat blue screen behind the door.
Yeah.
So much hissing. That poor cat.
I'm not
cat.
Even sure if that's what that was, or that was just some footage from some other show blown up to fit the available screen space.
It was Bewitched.
That's what, yeah,
there were cats in Bewitched,
maybe,
right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Could be.
I think the thing with her, though, with Antoinette Bauer, I mean, she was like a mainstay in Hollywood for about 20 years or so. I mean, she was just all over the place. So having her on the show, I have to go back and look at exactly where this episode falls within all of her shows, but it was starting from, I guess, 59. So this would have been 67. So she's mm-hmm. already been mm-hmm. in Hollywood for 8 years at this point. And then she's got another decade or so to go after this. Maybe about 20 more years, actually. So whereas some of the actresses that come on, I think maybe like the flavor of the week, there's little bit part actresses come in. She was maybe a bit more of a known commodity in Hollywood. And certainly became so in the years following this as well. I thought she did a pretty good job with the role, though. Like, really giving some character to Sylvia.
Yeah.
Yeah, she did. She did. It's just the character itself is not that memorable.
We already talked about Korub, but Theo Marcuse, who played Korub, died not so long after this episode. I think it was
a month even. He got killed in a car wreck. Wow.
I think it was like 2 months after this episode. So, which is sad. It's always sad for me when I'm watching someone and I know that like right after they were in something, they passed away. The close-ups of him, though, in this episode were really odd. Like, from a camera standpoint, stylistically, they were so disjointed with everything else in the episode.
Yeah, there was a couple times where it really jumped out at me. Mm. Like, that, whoa.
It was kind of odd.
Was there any reason for that?
I don't know. Like, I mean, it's stylistically, it's something that you feel like this is done very much on purpose for a specific reason, but it's not done anywhere else in the episode. So then it makes you wonder why. Like,
that's exactly it. It did make me wonder why, because I noticed, and I'm not a filmmaker. I don't play with cameras, and so I don't know much about technique.
Yeah.
And I could not figure out why they were doing this.
But Char, your co-host onto The Journey.
To the Journey.
Tristan is a filmmaker
and likes
to play with cameras in the shower, apparently.
That he does, apparently.
Wait, what? Yeah.
He did his ice bucket challenge video.
Oh, yeah.
Where you only see his head and maybe his feet, but then you see the ice cubes come down, but it's all in the shower. Yeah.
It's a good Psycho parody. I liked it a lot.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's a fine, fine video. You got to check that out.
At first, I was really nervous. When it was like Tristan in the shower, I'm like, I don't know about this, you guys.
Hey.
Not really. It's not even like a PG-13 rating, guys. No, it's pretty
it's
innocent.
Super innocent.
But he's still in the shower.
He's still in the shower.
Mm-hmm. So, so maybe I ought to just make him sit down and watch his episode and try and figure this out for the rest of us who can't, because I got nothing.
It obviously shows his inner conflict, you know, this zoom in, you know. I don't know. I got nothing.
Maybe they just thought it would look spooky.
Maybe.
Ooh, maybe it's just scary.
No.
Like, if we zoom really close into his face, it'll look like he's just a disembodied head that's floating there for no reason.
You know what it reminded me of, guys? The extreme close-up in Wayne.
Oh, yeah. Extreme close-up.
That's what it reminded me of. Yeah,
we're all
Jenny's
doing it.
Doing
yes,
it.
That's great.
Let's talk about a few of the odd things that happen here, because one thing that they talk about in this episode, they mention, is sympathetic magic. That's how they're probing people's minds and how they're killing people by thinking about it and how they're making the Enterprise get really hot by holding it over a candle. And they also talk about the twilight world of consciousness. So sympathetic magic and the twilight world of consciousness is the explanation for the spooky and the strange things that happen this episode. I don't think there's any scientific explanation behind any of it. That comes out in the episode. But the various odd things that happen in here, just talk about those for a moment. Enterprise. They actually had that little miniature Enterprise made for this episode so that they could hold it over a candle.
Yeah, and then they encased it in plastic and then gave it to the Smithsonian.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they did.
Well,
can I get one for a keychain?
I know. I want that.
You probably can if you go there. They've got them in
the
gift shop.
Yeah, I haven't been
probably.
There. I don't know. But if they don't, then they need to replace whoever's in charge of merchandise.
They don't. And they need to replace whoever's in charge of merchandise.
Oh, that's
disappointing. They're there right next to the rack of Chekhov wigs.
I would have bought all of them.
Best sellers.
And the little Fraggle puppets.
Yeah. Well, the thing with the wig is it's got the crossover potential, right? Because it's got the whole Davy Jones / Star Trek vibe. So it can cater to either audience.
Kind of like the Captain Kirk mask can be either Kirk or Michael Myers.
Exactly.
Right, exactly.
There you go, exactly.
You just change the tag on the wig, though. It can be branded Star Trek or branded monkeys.
They can flip
monkeys,
it over,
right?
Flip it inside out.
Right. Yeah, you just flip it over or whatnot.
Also, it would be like at Disneyland where they have the wands with the little Mickey head on the end that light up different colors at night. You could have the transmuter wand. And it can light up. This episode is the
goldmine of
merchandising.
It's just full of merchandising opportunities.
It really is. Like, okay, with that, in that respect, it is a kid episode, I think, because this is stuff that kids should have been buying in the 60s.
Marionettes that catch on fire. What's the worst that could happen? They combust for no reason.
Yeah.
Plus, you could get the handcuff set with the giant key.
Sweet. Yeah.
So sympathetic magic.
And get the chains for the downstairs basement. Yeah. I mean, so much potential here.
So
the Sylvia S&M set.
Oh, God.
Wand not included. Sold
Wand
separately.
Sold separately.
Oh, so sympathetic magic. The way that she described it, is it like the secret where you just like, wish really hard and then good things will come to you? Is that what she's like? I wished that guy was dead and he was.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what she's describing.
That's like
at first it sounds like voodoo. It's like she made a Jackson doll or something, but then she goes on to describe what you're saying, Drew.
Yeah, it's just it's a strange concept for aliens to draw power from. I guess they're outside the galaxy, so... But they don't really draw power from it.
Yeah, they're two cans that can do anything. I mean...
Well, let's remember that aliens from the Andromeda Galaxy can turn you into powder cubes.
Oh, that's also true.
That's right.
But that wasn't magic.
That was...
They didn't wish really hard, and everybody turned into D20s.
I wish you were a cube. A powder cube.
So I could crush you.
Now I've proven my point.
I have to say, I was really disappointed that they didn't give any kind of explanation, like, and make it into something scientific. I think I'm kind of spoiled by Doctor Who. Because in Doctor Who, they'll bring up vampires, and they'll bring up witches, and bring up ghosts, and there's always some, you know, science behind it. It's even if it's just aliens are doing this somehow. And they never did that. And I was just like, what was the point of any of this? It was just spooky.
Is that true of classic Doctor Who, Jenny, or the newer Doctor Who?
You would have to ask Ben about that because I'm not, you know, I'm not as well versed in the classic Doctor episodes. I'm not, he is.
I'm curious because in modern Star Trek, even in the Next Generation and certainly later on, I think they would have done that on Star Trek as well. But in this case, on the original series, there's no attempt to.
I haven't gotten to it yet, but I understand that Beverly falls in love with a ghost. Does that turn out to not be a ghost?
It's an alien.
The candles, the thing with the candles. I may be completely wrong.
Well, on Voyager, they would definitely have a technical explanation for the entire thing. Yeah.
No doubt.
So, anything else unusual here that happens that you guys found interesting? I thought that when I first saw the remastered, which was a few years ago, if you think back to American Idol, I felt like they got their inspiration from an Adam Lambert concert where he comes back on American Idol to perform and it's just dry ice everywhere. The entire place is just smoke all over the place. Like, I thought they could have him come out and actually sing in the remastered. That would be cool.
It's thought.
I mean, they wanted to have a boy band play in the mess hall on Enterprise, so why not have Adam Lambert come out and sing in Cat's Paw?
Why not?
All right. Well, I guess we've run through all the points we can talk about in this episode without just rehashing points, which we've probably already been doing anyway, because there's really not a whole lot of things that happened in this episode to talk about unless we want to talk about the ongoing black cat chase and the fact that I love the scene where Kirk is practically jumping on a trampoline to get out of the dungeon. Like, isn't it convenient that that dungeon has this nicely shaped hole at the top that you can drop in and out of the dungeon?
Mm-hmm. So perfectly shaped.
He does like nicely shaped holes.
I want to bring up really quick.
Well done.
The fight with between the crew members. I like that, you know, Kirk having to punch McCoy in the face and then fight Sulu off, who's doing like karate.
I know.
I had to bring that up. And the fact that it takes Spock just as long to fight off Scotty as Kirk to fight off McCoy twice. And Sulu.
Good point.
Yeah, that is odd.
That's how good Kirk is.
Wonderful fight scene. You've got to get a fight scene in a TOS episode somewhere, somehow. You've got to get a fight scene in there.
I like how they put those antenna on McCoy to like justify the random fight scene.
So, final thoughts on this episode and your rating, of course, as well. Shar, how about you?
Oh, God. What more is there to say, guys? I don't know. They went into this with the idea that it was going to be a Halloween episode. Yes?
Yes.
They had
or did
to
they just decide, like, okay, timing-wise, this works perfectly, so let's just do it.
I guess that's the case. There are so many references. Like, I don't know if they really went in saying, like, we're going to shoot this now and we're going to air it right before Halloween. But there's so many references to Trick or Treat and Halloween in the episode itself that it became, I would think, a no-brainer. Like, okay, let's just hold on to this and air it. Plus the fact that this would not be the best foot forward as the first episode for people to see after the break.
Well, they did open season 3 with Spock's brain.
Yeah. Oh. They were definitely right about that. And I think there's a reason why we don't see a very deliberately holiday-themed episode in Star Trek through and through again. because this is fail. It just even for the original Star Trek, the production value is incredibly low. The story has no idea where it's going. I mean, we mentioned a few times how it's trying to be so many things, and yet it doesn't really ever become any one of them. Mm-hmm. It's very disorganized, and the pacing is weird. It just lacks an identity altogether. The whole thing with black cats, that's a myth, guys. That's a myth. Black cats are awesome. Don't listen to Sylvia. So I'm not a huge fan. If I ever watch this again, I will have to be drunk. I think I'm going to give it 2 rounds.
Wow. First time we've ever had that rating on the show.
Well, there you go.
All right. How about you, Jenny?
Well, you know, I went into this episode not having any expectations. I think I expected it to be really cheesy and just over the top corny. Because it is, I mean, I could tell that it was a Halloween episode. So I think my expectation was very, very low. And it at least met that. So I wasn't truly disappointed in this episode. It was a lot of fun to watch. I mean, even though it was just kind of, you know, just hokey.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to give it 2 really fake plastic gems.
Excellent. Very good.
How about you, Landry?
Well, this episode is just not any good.
Tell us how you Mike really and I, feel, Landry.
Mike and I just went through our top 5 of season 2. And it's just... I was thinking, like, look at season 2 and there's so many good episodes. Like, how could I pick 5? Well, not Cat's Paw. And I immediately deleted it. It's just not... very good. It doesn't have anything to say, and if it does, it's just not saying it well. I mean, it's well acted enough, and I appreciate the idea that Kirk, the through line is him like avenging a random red shirt, but other than that, it's just not any good. So I'm gonna give it 2 marionettes out of 10.
All right. Well, my final thoughts on it. One thing we didn't talk about here, because we can't really talk about it. We don't know what Robert Block is thinking or where he's going with it. But Robert Block wrote this episode, and he also wrote What Are Little Girls Made Of? And in both episodes, he refers to the old ones. And I don't know who the old ones are, but I feel like it's a missed opportunity within Star Trek to explore further just who the old ones are, because we have explored these various races that are ancient and have influenced not only humans, but various civilizations. And so I'm wondering who the old ones are. That's something I'd like to know sometime. As for the episode itself, you know, I treat this episode differently from the rest of the episodes because, like Jenny said, when you go into it, you can see it's a Halloween episode. So I treat it as a special episode of the original series that's there for a specific purpose, which is to have fun with a Halloween theme. So I'm not really expecting it to say much to me or to make a lot of sense. It's just a fun time in a castle. Think of it as a Scooby-Doo episode where you're like in a haunted castle and there's just all kinds of crazy stuff going on. And at the end, they pull the mask off, and there are Fraggles underneath. So I kind of see it that way. And I enjoy watching it on Halloween just for the fun factor of it. And it's one of those weird moments within Star Trek for me where there's an episode that everyone thinks is terrible that I like for some specific reason. And in this case, it's because I connect it with Halloween. You know, I like The Royale on The Next Generation, and I don't know why. It's not a good episode, but I like watching it. It's fun. So this is one of those for me. So I'm going to give this episode 7 verses of terrible poetry. All right. So Jenny and Landry, thanks for dropping by today and suffering through Cat's Paw with us, if that's how you look at it.
That was fantastic.
So before we go, Jenny, tell everyone where they can find you around the interwebs and what else you have going on.
Well, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Jenny_Z. I do a podcast about Doctor Who with my co-host, Benjamin McCormick, playingdoctorpodcast.com. And I also do Mouthy Broadcast, where sometimes I have Charlene on and we get drunk and we talk a lot of trash about a lot of things that we can't say on this show. So you can find us there at mouthybroadcast.com.
I'm still waiting for that episode where you guys have Drew on as a special guest.
This has got to happen.
It would just be me shaking my head like I am now.
Yeah, what's going on with your head there, Landry? It's just shaking back and forth, back and forth.
You got a kink, buddy? Something wrong?
No. Mouthy Broadcast is a great podcast that I listen to all the time.
He's a little marionette.
I think Sylvia is controlling his neck movement. All right.
That's it.
Well, Andrew, tell everyone where they can find you and what else you have going on here on the network and beyond.
Well, they can find me on Standard Orbit, where we talk TOS, Mike and I, and it's a lot of fun. You can find me on various places, including Twitter, under the username 005, DOUBLEOFIVE.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks again for dropping by today, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Well, Chris, you know that I love me some Jenny Zell and some Landrew and making Landrew blush. This has been a fantastic time. And I hope you had a good time, too, because you were the one who made Landrew blush.
Right. Now, I'm trying to remember, Char, did we make him blush on audio, or was that on the other side of the room?
The other side of the room.
Oh, no, it had to have happened.
During recording. I'm just not sure if it comes through in the audio or not. So maybe.
I think if you're listening hard enough, you can tell when Landrew blushes. You can pinpoint the exact moment because it's that good.
Yeah. I'll be listening for that. Everyone listen for that as well. But it was great talking about Cat's Paw. I'm glad we got to do this episode today. I think it's really fun, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on the network this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
Also, I never know whether it's pronounced Babel or Babel, so I always feel scared to talk about it.
That you don't want to bring it up in polite conversation.
Yeah. Journey to boom. You know.
You know, journey to journey.
Yeah.
Journey to the center
to,
of the earth.
To the journey, yes.
Earl Grey.
Patrick Stewart said, look, we can have that scene where Worf explains why he's in the movie, or we can have my Mambo scene, but we can't have both.
The Orb.
He just completely sells it. And he is Benjamin Sisko by this point. I mean, there's no doubt about it.
Well, he better be Benjamin Sisko by this point, yeah. Matthew. There's only one episode left in the series.
This is true.
To the journey!
And this is, I would dare even say, when he starts falling in love with Captain Janeway. This is the road that leads to the bathtub. From this point forward, he is just ever so slowly falling for her. And the monkey.
Warp 5.
They were just like, okay, we know this is the end, so screw it. We're just going to do whatever the hell we want. And putting Shatner in there, it's just like, why not? Who cares?
The Ready Room.
Also, one other thing it reminded me of, when they're in space, the escape pod that Trip and Kaitama use, did that not look to you guys like the ship from Pigs in Space without the engines?
Yes. Oh my gosh. You're right. You're absolutely right.
Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
There are two notes that I seriously made. There were two notes that I made.
Mm-hmm.
One of them is, I love Riker's TV. I question what he's watching.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
Robert Wise. If he's on the bridge of the Voyager, he's not even back at Harry Kim's station, right? He's one of the extras in the background who has to stand because he doesn't even have a chair.
Literary Treks.
You're waiting for one of the core cast of Vanguard to show up in these books. You're going to be waiting a long time. Because as long as the three of us have anything to say about it, it ain't going to happen.
Continuing Mission.
The big thing here is I did it all for the cost of 3DS Max, which I bought with an educational discount. So like $300.
I don't think you can get an educational discount on materials to build an actual set, can you?
Axanar.
the official podcast.
When I learned the concept behind Prelude to Axanar that was going to be a History Channel style documentary, I got so excited. Like, my favorite Star Trek book ever is David Goodman's Federation, the first 150 years, because I just love, it's a history book.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can get them everywhere you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, one way that you can help us out here at the Ready Room and on the network is to go click the subscribe button. If you normally stream the shows, because you can do that, you can go to iTunes and just click play and it'll stream it. Subscribing helps us rise up in the search results. The way iTunes works is rankings are based largely on lifetime subscriptions, star ratings, written reviews. So by subscribing, you'll be helping other Star Trek fans find the show. Another way you can help us is, of course, to leave a written review and a star rating. As I just mentioned there, those do make a big difference, and we love to hear what you think about the show. If you're not an Apple user, don't worry. We've got you covered. You can find us all over the place. We're on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, BlackBerry. You can also go to our website. You can stream from there. You can also download the MP3 file. You do that through the SoundCloud player. Look in the upper right corner of the player. And you can grab the RSS link as well if you have some other way that you pull podcasts in to your smartphone or your tablet or your computer. Another way you can help us out is to become a patron of the network by going to patreon.com/trekafilm. That's patreon.com/trekafilm. You'll find our current goals there, as well as milestone contribution levels and the perks we have for you in exchange for your support. Patreon is a way for you to support us on a month-to-month basis. So it's a lot like Kickstarter, except it's a recurring monthly thing. And we have great perks for you. You can become a producer. You can become part of our content development team. We also have exclusive content. Early content is available there as well sometimes. And your support really makes it possible for us to bring the show to you. We have so many great supporters there already. And I also want to say thank you to our associate producer here on the Ready Room, Renee Roberts. And you can find Renee on Twitter. Her username is Mares, M-R-E-S-S underscore 1701. Renee is one of our biggest supporters for many years now, in fact. And so go follow her. She is a huge Star Trek fan, a huge fan of the network and supporter, and does a wonderful job here of helping us, you know, come up with things that we're going to talk about on the network, helping us create content. You too can join the team if you go to patreon.com/trekafilm, and we appreciate anything that you can do to help us out there. Oh, Char, one thing I need to mention, I forgot to mention it at the top of the show. Everyone probably knows about this already because I put out a special message, but if you listened to the Ready Room 158, that was the one about Pathfinder, and you got into the feature and you hear this echo going on for the first 20 minutes of the feature, that was fixed shortly after release. But if your application downloaded the show before I fixed it and posted a new file, then you've still got the old file with the echo on your device. If that's happened to you, the way that you can get the corrected file is to, like, if you're on a smartphone and you have a podcast application, you can swipe and then delete that episode completely and then refresh your feed, and then you'll see the new episode pop in. You'll actually see two now because we have 159 has come out since then as well. And then with 160, if you're listening to this, that'll be three. But you'll see the new one there, and then you can just download the file again. Unfortunately, once a file is downloaded, there's no way for us to really push out a replacement on your device. So you do need to do that. Just in case, like I said, most people probably know this already, but we really work really hard to have good audio here on the network. And I hate when something like this happens. And I especially hate the fact that although I fix it, there's no way for me to make sure that everyone has the new file. So right. Be sure to do that. And apologies for the mess up there in the editing. I had a little glitch that came up in my editing process.
It's tough. It very rarely happens to us, but, you know. It
happens from time to time.
Very rare occasion.
All right. So now, if you'd like to share your thoughts on Cat's Paw or anything we talked about in news today, we did ask you to let us know what you think about every news story today. You know, which captain would survive a zombie attack? What kind of wallpaper would you like to see us produce here at Trek FM? What's the atmosphere for Star Trek like in your state? There are many ways for you to do that. You can go to our website. There's a form at trek.fm/contact. Use that form, choose to send to a show, and choose the Ready Room, and that'll come to me by email, and it comes to Char as well. You can also send us voicemail. If you look in the left sidebar on the website, you'll see a little tool for that. Or just go to speakpipe.com. That's the word speak and the word pipe.com/trekfm. And you can send us a voicemail through there. We'd love to hear your voice and use your voicemail on the show. You can also find us on Twitter. Our username is trekfm. Facebook.com/trekfm is our main page. And don't forget about the Babel Conference. That's B-A-B-E-L, the conference that the Enterprise was going to in the episode Journey to Babel. That's our private closed Facebook group for listeners. It's a replacement for the forums that used to be on our website. So you just need to go there and click join, and then I'll let you in. And you can get there by typing the Babel Conference into the search bar on Facebook, or go to our website and click discussion on the menu bar. That'll take you there as well. Nashar, when you're not, you know, looking for the best place to hide from zombies or getting your haircut like Chekhov's, where can people find you?
How did you know I'm getting a haircut tomorrow, as a matter of fact? I'm going to go for the Chekhov. When I'm not getting my haircut or running away from zombies, you can find me hanging out on Twitter, and my handle is OhTheProfanity. Or you can catch me on Thursdays with new episodes of To the Journey.
To the Journey.
With me and my co-host Tristan Riddell, and we talk any and all things Voyager.
You know, I was watching a show yesterday. I can't remember what show it was right now, but someone actually said, "Oh, the profanity," during the show.
Whoa, really?
And I thought,
where?
I can't remember what we were watching.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, are they trying to steal my act here?
I think so. You better check.
Uh-oh.
Someone is following you on Twitter, and they're stealing your ID.
Okay, it is time to break out the compression phaser rifle and get some things a-flying. This will not do.
So everyone, go check out Char at Oh the Profanity and on To the Journey. And then if you'd like to find me, I'm on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. No, I haven't heard anyone say that in a TV show. And probably
I would love
never
to, though.
Will. How does that come up? You know, I don't know.
Right. That would be very cleverly done.
It would. But you can also find me on Facebook, facebook.com/cbrianjones. And I'm also in the Babel Conference a lot of the time. So if you'd like to chat with me at length about Star Trek in more than 140 characters, come on and join the Babel Conference. And I'd love to talk to you over there. And then elsewhere on the network, I do lots of different shows, Literary Treks, The Orb, Warp 5, Continuing Mission, Matterstream, Hyperchannel. And I co-host the official podcast of Star Trek Axanar with Axanar creator and executive producer Alec Peters. So check out all of those shows if you want to find out what else I'm talking about in the world of Star Trek. Before we let you go, I'd like to remind you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up. Pick up World War Z or anything else you want absolutely free. You'll get to keep that if you decide not to stick with Audible, so there's nothing to lose. But when you try Audible, it really makes a difference in our ability to bring the Ready Room to you every week. So if you're not already a customer, please go check them out. You're going to absolutely love it. If you love podcasts, you're going to love audiobooks, and you're going to love Audible. And we really thank Audible for their support of the show and the network. And one more thing here, Enterprise in Space. Don't forget to check out this really great project. It's a project of the nonprofit National Space Society that will design and launch an 8-foot orbiter named NSS Enterprise and return the craft to Earth and then put that in a museum. The NSS Enterprise orbiter will carry more than 100 student-designed science experiments into space. And these will be designed by students all the way from kindergarten through postgraduate. I think it's a great way to support science education, and you can actually be part of putting an actual ship named Enterprise into orbit, because when you support the project, you will become a virtual crew member. Your name will actually go on a chip in the orbiter, fly into space, come back, and will be on display there with the orbiter in the museum. So it's a really great project. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and get your seat on the mission.
That is so cool. I love the way that this is happening. I think this is the way to get science awareness up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And if you want to know more about it also, go over and listen to Matterstream 23 with me and Larry Nemechek and Sean Case, who is the founder of Enterprise in Space, where we go through the overview of the project and you can find out a lot more about what we're doing. All right, Char, well, I'm going to run down to the dungeon right now. I feel really bad for that skeleton. I mean, they unlocked everyone else. They just left him hanging there. I think that he'd like to get down.
Yeah, that I imagine after a few hours, that's really uncomfortable. Definitely. And so I think it's time to stick a pair of handcuffs in it, because this ready room is done. Okay.